Like to call the meeting of the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. We have a quorum. And we have the minutes from the 24th of February. Someone make a motion if you've had a chance to look at them.
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes.
Representative Christensen moves the minutes from the 24th of February. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
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 That's good enough. Any opposed? All right. Minutes approved. Today we'll be hearing from the university and also from Minsku, as we announced yesterday. And I believe the first, I don't know if it's a flip of a coin or how this was determined, but the university is first.
They're cheering.
And we have three testifiers with us today, and begin by introducing yourself, and away we go.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thanks for the opportunity today to present our report on our 2014-15 biennial appropriation and performance goals. My name is Richard Fitzenreiter. I go by Fitz. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer at the University of Minnesota, and I'll let my colleagues quickly introduce themselves, and then we'll dive into the presentation.
Good afternoon. Good I'm Julie Connison. I am the Associate Vice President for Budget and Finance and the Budget Director for the University.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert McMaster. I'm the Vice Provost and Dean of Undergraduate Education on the Twin Cities campus.
All right. Good to see you all here.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you should have going around two documents. One, obviously, the slideshow for today, but we've also provided each of you with a copy of the actual submittal that was required of the University of Minnesota to the Commissioner Myron Franz with respect to our performance measures. That document has considerable detail with respect to these performance measures, and we're simply going to highlight for you today the results of those specific performance measures. I would point out that in the last several pages of this document, because members have on occasion when we've testified here wanted to know, for example, where did the $15 million of reductions come from in fiscal 14, and true to what we said we'd do when we agreed to the performance measure, there is an itemized list line by line identifying where those cuts, those reductions came from. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as a way of an overview here, in 2013, the Higher Ed Bill Chapter 99, 5% of the university's appropriation for fiscal 15, the O&M appropriation, was conditioned on accomplishing five specific performance measures that were identified in the session law. That 5% amounts to $26.5 million was at risk for the university if we did not make these performance goals. Those five performance measures that were specified in session law was to improve graduation rates for low-income students, improve graduation rates more generally, increase the total number of undergraduate STEM degrees, increase invention disclosures, and decrease our administrative costs by $15 million for fiscal year 2014. I'm going to turn to my colleague, Vice Provost McMaster, just to give you the background on the measures, and then we'll do the administrative reductions and invention disclosures, and then we'll put up on the slide the very last one that shows you the specific goals and what was accomplished.
Mr. McMaster, yeah. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in terms of the graduation rate goals that we had, there were two different measures. One dealt with low-income students for the Twin Cities campus only, and these students were defined as first-time, full-time, degree-seeking freshmen on the campus who were considered Pell eligible. So that's a federal definition, Pell eligibility, that indicates lower income. For the general graduation rate, rates for the system, these were first-time, full-time degree-seeking freshmen from all the campuses who graduated in four and or five and or 6 years, and we'll show you the data shortly. The calculations that we made that were agreed upon were looking at the three rates, the 4, 5, and or 6-year rates. We used a 3-year weighted average in case there were some variations that needed to be smoothed out. And the goal was, or the target increase was 1% for each of the population groups. We were also asked as a third measure to look at STEM degree production. And we have a definition, again, a federal definition of what STEM means. We looked at 11 fields at the university, majors, based on that STEM definition. Again, we looked at a 3-year average, and the target that was established was to increase that 3% over the baseline measure from the previous 2 years. So shortly I can show you the data and where we stand with those metrics.
And Mr. Chairman, on invention disclosures, this was also a required reporting measure for the university. This is coordinated by our Office of Technology Commercialization, and the goal was to increase that target by 3%. And again, in a few moments, we'll be able to show you the actual results of that particular measure as well. I want to turn to my colleague, Julie Tennyson, just to walk you through the 2014 administrative cost reductions and also give you a progress report and a glimpse into what's going on since 2014 and what we're working on today and what we have left to do towards the President's $90 million goal of reducing administrative costs.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, this one, the goal was actually pretty straightforward, to reduce administrative costs by $15 million in FY14, so we'll spend a little time talking about the results right here for you. As I mentioned, the goal was $15 million. We actually accomplished and implemented cost reductions of $18.8 million in FY14. Of that total, 61% was related to staffing changes. That is primarily position eliminations, but it also includes other staffing changes such as reducing appointment times, maybe somebody working 50% down to 25%, or it also includes replacing people at who might leave for retirement or for moving just to another place, replacing them with a lower cost individual. So 61% was personnel savings. The 39%, or $7.4 million, was from operating reductions. In most cases, this is instances where units make a conscious decision to reduce the amount that's available for things such as office supplies and travel, professional development, that type of thing, as well as facility costs. So if they're able to find, if they're in lease space, able to find lower cost lease space or to reduce utility expenses and so forth. We did provide, as Fitz mentioned, the full list of the items by unit in the attachment to the letter to Commissioner Franz. If you'd like to review all of that. And again, this is consistent with the President's goal to redirect $90 million within the institution over 6 years, to redirect it from administrative expenses into areas that will enhance our mission or keep the growth in tuition rates down or to meet inflation costs over time. Specific to the where we're at in reaching the $90 million goal, FY14, so this performance measure, was the first year of the 6-year goal to reduce administrative costs by $90 million. Where we're at, that 18.8 shows up in the box there in the middle as rounded to $19 million for FY14. That was actually implemented. FY15, we have approved for the current year budget an additional $20 million of administrative cost reductions. They have been approved, they are in process, and we will verify implementation of those throughout this year and at the close of the fiscal year. So between these two fiscal years, we've approved or implemented $39 million of administrative reductions. As you can see from the pie chart, again, over 60%, 68% in this case is related to personnel savings, with the 32% in the non-personnel category. Then for FY16, which is the budget process we're in right now that will begin July 1, we have given units an additional target of $15 million more in administrative costs. So For the first 3 years of a six-year plan, we will have hit 60% of our goal if we're able to implement all of that, with 40% left for the last 3 years. The examples, as I mentioned, were position eliminations, salary savings from other personnel actions, general operations, equipment, facilities, and so forth.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this slide, the last slide in your deck, then shows the actual outcome of these measures, provides you with the baseline number that was agreed upon with the state, what the target increase required in the performance measure in the session law, the target value that we had to get to, the actual result that we accomplished, and then the status, as you can see, that we achieved all five of the performance measures. And with that, Mr. Chairman, if there are specific questions on this document, we're here to answer them. Or sure. Any other question that you may have?
Sure, we will have. Can you recall how far back? I mean, this hasn't always been a general practice, I don't believe, but can you tell us how far back this has been a requirement the legislature has requested?
You know, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's been a little episodic. I know we've had them at least one other time, okay. But I don't recall in recent memory, and I would say since the Great Recession, I don't recall whether we've had performance, but I know we have had them before.
Okay, that's fine. Members, questions? Representative Pulaski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pfitzenreiter, would we be able to get a breakdown of exactly what these positions were and how much the salaries were? And so we would know exactly who or what was cut and then where the money went. And I mean specifically where it went, or is it just a nebulous thing? It just sort of floats from one area to the other. How does that work?
Mr. Pfitzenreiter?
Mr. Chairman, to the last question of the nebulous float from one area to the other, that's simply not true. And perhaps, I don't know how much time the committee wants to talk about the internal budget process at the University of Minnesota, but the reallocations that you see in this document, those monies were reduced from one activity and re-spent on other activities. That's what reallocation and budget cuts are about. We eliminate positions, and there are other bills that the university has to pay, pay for. And but for these reductions, the university would be facing the choice of raising tuition or coming to the state for additional resources. And in fact, the $15 million that we will be doing in 16 and 17 have the effect of reducing the necessary tuition increase or ask to the state of Minnesota for additional resources. Those are the resources we have at our disposal, and this acts to offset those costs. It is part of the resources in the budget process. In other words, we don't sit and identify this particular saving is going to this particular cost. It becomes a revenue. We take it back from the units and redeploy it as part of the budget process.
Representative Pulaski.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Pfitzenreiter, I'm not asking for it today. I'm asking for it at some point this session. I would like to know what you cut and where it went in specificity. Now, that shouldn't be a difficult thing. The money came from somewhere. It went somewhere. So where did you take it from, and where did it go? There must be a list somewhere. And I assume the regents approved this. Now, if I were a regent, maybe some of the region candidates are here, they could tell me that they were presented with this list and they had the list in specificity when they voted on this. So it's got to exist. You don't have to give it to me today, but just at some point. I would like to know what you cut by title, salary. Maybe you can't give a name for privacy reasons, or you took a budget from somewhere and you used it somewhere.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. members Ritter. Of the committee, the list is in front of you.
Is so that
the list is here. It's in the document. I've said it five times. It's in the document. Please look at the document. We will go back and give you in the broadest or finest categories we can as to where those investments were made.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm going to look over the document, and then at a point, I would like, I don't need to waste committee time, but a visit in my office would be nice for a detailed examination of what exactly it means when you've listed it in this fashion, and then where it went. I'm not accusing you of not doing it. I know you did something. I would just like to know what it is, and I'd like to know how it's going to continue in the future, because our previous discussion was obviously there was a reference to putting it on tuition. I would certainly like to know if you did put some of this on tuition, how much and where?
Mr.
Where exactly did this offset tuition, and in what area? Graduate, undergraduate, what department?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll spend as much time here talking about it as you'd like. I'm also, be sure I'll be making an appointment to come and see you, Representative Pawlowski, no problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't take any more committee time today, Mr. Chairman.
All right. There he is. I thought Gruenhagen was sitting over there, but now he's sitting over there.
Mr. Chair, he was told to move. They were going to reel him in. I don't know if that's going to work, but good luck.
Representative Gruenhagen, you have a question.
They were afraid you might rub off of me.
Okay. No, vice versa.
Yeah, or vice versa. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your testimony, and thanks for the documents you provided. I guess my question follows up a little bit with Representative Pawlowski. So were these reductions, and I appreciate the big breakdown you have, but were these reductions reallocated? Did your total spending go down by this much, or was it reallocated to other areas that, and maybe I'm, you know, I haven't had a chance to look at this that close either, and I walked in a little bit late. I apologize for that. But so was this actual reductions, or it says reallocated on the top, so I assume that this money was put someplace else. And I guess that follows up with the idea of was it put towards freezing tuition or towards expanding other programs, or, you know, where was it used? And it probably was used in more than one area, but do you have any general comments about that?
Mr. Chairman, when someone uses the word reallocation, I just want to make sure the committee understands the definition. It means that something was cut, some expense ended, to pay for another expense. Or on occasion, so that tuition didn't go up as much as it otherwise perhaps would have needed to go in order to pay that expense. Because the university faces expenses far beyond the expenses that we ever come here to ask you to fund. We have multiple expenses way beyond the money that we get from the state or tuition dollars. We have increases in compensation, in health care, in utilities, in technology, in the cost of purchasing library materials. We have a variety of expenses. And those dollars are reduced in order to help pay for those expenses. And we can provide the committee in those in very broad categories where those, where in this particular year, where those dollars went.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just a quick follow-up. You know, one of the things that came up with our discussion with Minsky was settlement of contracts, okay? And I think, if I remember right, I could be wrong, is we put a particular percentage in the last spending bill for Minsky and the university as far as settlements are concerned. Did you stay within those parameters that we had in the bill? Or did your settlements come in excess of that, of what we allowed you?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the University of Minnesota did not receive any parameters from the legislature with regard to compensation.
Mr. Representative Gruenhagen, are you done?
Probably not, but I'll pass for now.
Representative Whelan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a couple questions. My first one kind of relates back to the internal budgeting process, and I don't need to take up committee time on this either, but I requested, I think it was a week ago, if I could get a kind of a breakdown more of the budget, just to get an understanding of where all the money goes. And I definitely appreciate the reallocation table that you included, but I'm wondering just for your budget for this biennium, what that might look like. And then I'm wondering, and I don't know if this was touched on or if Representative Gruenhagen kind of touched on it, but for your personnel savings, Do they count only in the year implemented, or does the $11.4 million in staff reductions from 2014 get counted each of the 6 years?
Mr. Fitzreiter.
It's counted once.
All right, thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to spend 10, 15 minutes, might get you in the weeds too much. I have a few slides that maybe would help the committee understand how the budget gets put together inside the university, how it relates to the biennial request, and to talk about those costs that we face and how those get financed, as well as how the reallocation plays against what would otherwise be a tuition increase or increased ask from the state. If you want to take some time today, we can do it another day.
If we can limit it to, say, 10 minutes or so, we will.
Sure, it'll probably raise all kinds of questions, but...
Representative Pulaski?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Fitzreiter, when you do that, are we going to see the reallocation across all of the system of the university, including Duluth, or is it just going to be sort of as one big entity?
Fitzreiter?
At the institutional level, when I talk here, it is across all system of all campuses. I don't dive into here at this committee the individual. We don't treat Duluth any different than we treat the law school or the medical school or anything else.
Mr. Chair, there have been issues raised about Duluth into the last session and now. And when you visit with me, can you include Duluth in this discussion of how you allocate resources? I would like an explanation of why I'm getting emails now from Duluth saying there is a huge discrepancy in how the Duluth campus is funded compared to other entities of the university. And again, today you're caught off guard, and I'm not asking for it. But when you visit, I would like a breakdown that would address, and I can send you, I'll strip off who sent it to me, but I would like to know exactly how you're funding Duluth.
Sure. Mr. Chairman,
perhaps
this discussion next will shed some light.
I think the committee will enjoy it. Right. Well, enjoyment might not be the right word, but appreciate what you're going to show us.
This will be a little bit of a deep dive, but I kind of anticipated that we may get into this today. When the university begins to, and frankly, we start this process of thinking about the budgets for fiscal 16 and 17, this process at the university actually started last June and July last summer. We received, just like other state agencies, instructions from Minnesota Management and Budget. And during that summer, we start our biennial budget planning process. But at the same time we're doing our biennial budget planning, we can't allow the biennial budget planning to ignore what inevitably is going to happen when we have to implement the annual budget at the University of Minnesota for the fiscal year July 1 that starts this current July 1. And we also have to think about the following July 1 of fiscal 17. In addition to that, we go to the Board of Regents with all of this information. We also do a long-range financial plan for the institution. So all of this information and planning and thinking is an iterative, constant process to get to a budget, an annual budget at the university that has to be implemented July 1. And you're obviously the late session, every third Monday in May, complicates that planning in the biennial budget years. As I said, this process, so what we have to do is we not only, and this is sort of a timeline of all the way back to July of 14, where we begin thinking about a conceptual framework for the university. We have to understand what our potential costs are in 16 and 17, what our recurring costs are, our one-time costs, what investments we may want to, new strategic investments the president may want to make in the institution, and that planning framework goes in parallel with the biennial request because we can't allow those to get out of sync. Ultimately, in that process, we winnow this down, and the next slide shows you what our current framework is for 16 and 17. So again, we start this process with looking at our recurring costs. So we do a projection of what our utility bills are going to go up at the University of Minnesota. We're the single largest customer of Xcel Energy in the Twin Cities. We have to pay attention to what's going on in electrical. We have to pay those bills. We have lease costs. What's our compensation assumption? And by the way, our compensation assumption for the next 2 years is 2% for our employees. That's not across the board. It's a merit system subject to collective bargaining with our employees. We have to look at our health care costs. We have technology cost increases, as I mentioned, library, instructional materials. We have public safety. Do we have to add another police officer? We've got to pay for that. There are safety issues around the Twin Cities campus and other places. So we have non-recurring expenses. I mentioned to the committee that we are currently investing $83 million of our own resources. We didn't come and ask the state. We didn't put it on tuition. We reallocated and spent funds to put in a new enterprise system, a new student system, new HR, and then reconnect those systems to our financial system. Those are critical business systems for the university. Their useful life was gone. We have to spend that money to fix them. We also look at our non-recurring expenses. We also, as I mentioned, the president has certain aspirational goals that he wants to invest in new initiatives at the University of Minnesota, and some of those clearly make it into the biennial request. It's the Healthy Minnesota, the Blue Ribbon, the vibrant economy issues, the facilities, and then, of course, the Blue Ribbon Commission from the governor. We also, at the same time, are looking at, well, what's the changes in enrollment going to be? How are we going to, what are some of the other resources that we have? Ultimately, we settle right before the point at which we take a budget to the Board of Regents in September, a biennial budget request, on a framework. This framework isn't exactly how it ends up, but it gives us a budget framework for the next 2 years to plan around. And as you can see, this is a big summary that you can see our comp costs, our 2% comp on O&M. When I say O&M, it's the O&M state money and tuition money. That'll cost us a 2% increase, will cost the institution $24.7 million. On all the other funds added that the university has, parking, housing, grants, clinical income, that number is $46 million. Those funds are going to have to cut their budget or find revenues to pay for that. This 24.7 the first year and 25 the second. Our utility bills, we project those to go up. Our debt actually is going to decline in fiscal 16, but it's going to bounce back in 17, principally because we are implementing a combined heat and power plant that's costing us $100 million in bonds. We did come to the state for that one. You gave us $10 million and told us to pay for the rest, so we've got to pay for that cost, and we're going to have to find money to do it. We have other technology increases to pay for. The PeopleSoft upgrade will now have a recurring license cost of $1.4 million that has to be paid for. And we have a variety, as the president mentioned, other academic priorities that don't necessarily find its way into the biennial request. You look at those costs, and they add up to about $40, $41 million in each of the next 2 years. And then there's the strategic priorities that you see in the biennial request, $21 million the first year and an additional $41. So our framework that we have is a $61 million incremental investment in the first year of the biennium and another $82 million in the second year. So how do we approach, once we have that framework, we think about, okay, how are we going to pay for the recurring and non-recurring costs, and how are we going to pay for those strategic priorities? And, of course, you just begin to look at the revenue side, and that includes both tuition and the state dollars and reallocation. So, for example, the way we think about it, we take the president has decided is, of course, increase that non-resident, non-reciprocity amount by at least $1,000 a year in each of the next 2 years. That's revenue that will help pay for the budget framework. It's roughly $3.8 million in each of the next 2 years, incremental. We say, what would it take for the tuition rates for resident and non-resident, I mean, for resident undergrad and resident grad and professional, what would they have to be if we were going to fully fund the recurring costs and the non-recurring costs at the University of Minnesota? They would have gone up 5.1% for resident undergrad and 5.6% in each of the next 2 years. to pay for that. However, we're going to reallocate, as the president has directed, $15 million in each of the next 2 years. That becomes a resource that lowered the otherwise required tuition increase, because that money's going to, as you can see by the arrow, be used to help pay for the compensation increase, the utility bills, the debt, the leases, the expenses we have. If we didn't do that, it's either going to go on tuition or we're going to come to the state for that money. We didn't. That's part of our lift at the university to help pay for those expenses. That ended up with a net. That $15 million in each of the next 2 years has the effect of lowering the otherwise would have been tuition increase by 2.1%. In addition to the strategic priorities that the president wants to ask the state of Minnesota to fund, the president made a decision that he wanted to not increase the resident undergraduate and the resident grad and professional rates at the 3% and 3.5%, and that dollar amount, that yield, became part of the state request. That then leads to the document that we submit to the board and ultimately gets submitted to the state of Minnesota as part of the biennial request. If you look at a grand total over the biennium of how the financial plan, the framework that we envision for the next 2 years, is funded, you can see that we have enough, 32% of the total pie is paid for by the freeze. We're asking the state to give us the money to allow to happen. 40% is on the strategic initiatives. The non-resident, non-reciprocity tuition contributes 6% on the solution, and the reallocation does 22%. Not quite two-thirds, one-third, but that's the framework for how we propose to attack the budget challenge, the framework as we've defined it. Now, this changes as the as you move through your process and we're moving through our budget process. A few moments ago, Julie mentioned that we have we're in the process of implementing the first year of that $15 million reallocation on administrative and academic units at the university. We're right in the middle of our internal budget process. We have over 50 budget hearings. Just like you have hearings with units, we have over 50 in which we're going through what are their budget issues, what are their needs, how are they addressing their reallocation. So that's a real quick overview of how we approach setting our budget. Ultimately, all of this goes to the Board of Regents, culminating, of course, in a president's recommended budget in June of this year. So with that, that was quick. I tried to do it in 10.
I think you did. Yeah, very good. And I think we may have a question or two, follow up. Representative Barrett, I think you're first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I have two questions. One question on Measure 1 and then the other one on the subject we've been talking about. Measure 1 being the increasing the graduation rate, undergraduate graduation rate for low-income students. And it went up, the graduation rate based on the four-year rate went up pretty significantly. Good news story there. I think it went from 38.9 to 47.1, which is quite an achievement. Can anyone there just tell me how that happened, what you had to do to make that happen, and can that be replicated in other parts of your university?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are several reasons why that rate went up so significantly. And, of course, it spans back over a four-year period because you're looking at initiatives that were put in place and then led to this in the second year, third year, and fourth year. One deals with the admission standards and the raising of admission standards. And there's a direct correlation between the quality of the students and the success of the students at the university. That plays a role. More importantly, there's a whole set of initiatives that have been put in place, some of them focusing on low-income students, some of them focusing on all students. For instance, our Welcome Week that we have that really orients students over a full week period before the semester begins. It's been a game changer in helping our retention, better advising and being attentive to advising, including new advising tools. We have a new online advising tool called A+. That's a very intensive advising tool. There have been several specific initiatives around low-income students, including a program called the President's Emerging Scholars that provides a financial incentive, a scholarship in year one, a scholarship in year four, extra mentoring and advising for those students throughout their career. And I could point to other specific initiatives for first-generation, low-income students of color. You put all that together, and you're starting to see some pretty significant shifts in those rates.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that. And so I figure there was probably a lot of things involved in that. And my second part of that question was, how do you replicate that in other areas? If you look at Measure 3, that only went from 48 to 52.5. Of course, that's system-wide. It's not at the Twin Cities campus only. And, of course, it would include all students, undergraduate students. But so I imagine a lot of that change from 48 to 52 was the result of what you did in the Twin Cities with undergraduate Pell Grant recipients. So it doesn't look like there's much of a, when you strip that out, doesn't look like there's much of an improvement outside of that group. Why wouldn't there be if a lot of those things could be used or could be implemented regardless of their background?
McMaster.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In fact, you do see more variation in the graduation rates with the system campuses, in part because they're smaller. And because they're smaller, you get more variation year to year, especially with a Crookston or a Morris. These are institutions that are, in fact, trying to take the best practices from the Twin Cities campus now and implement them also in a systematic way. It's going to take a little longer for the system campuses to shift their graduation rates, but if I showed you the specific graphs, there are upward trends with their first-year retention rates and graduation rates as well.
Thank you. And then one quick...
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So regarding then the other measure, the what we've talked about, administration costs, help me out here because I know the goal was to decrease the system-wide admin costs, and I think we heard from President Kaler that, you decreased it, but you actually shifted those resources to another area, assuming it's in a non-admin area. Otherwise, you wouldn't be decreasing them. You'd be keeping them the same. So in looking at your 2014 budget, your financial statements, and you look back at 13 and 12, you increased total expenses from 12 to 13 by $98 million, and then from 13 to 14 by $175 million. And then if you add the $18 million of shift, you actually increased it by $200 million. Which is more than you did the year before. I mean, I should have printed out a copy of this, but this came from your financial statement. So my point being is that overall you look at expenses. Of course, this doesn't show you what's overhead and what's not overhead, but without knowing that, that total expenses went up fairly significantly. And then, so I'm wondering, I guess, Representative Pawlowski and I and others kind of want to know proof maybe that these admin costs that were reduced were actually, there's a lot of questions here, but one of the main ones is how do we know that the shift didn't just occur in another admin area? And because the numbers would suggest that total expenses went up fairly significantly.
Sure.
Mr. Ryder.
Mr. Chairman, members, we another presentation that we can make to the committee that may be helpful is we've done what an administrative cost is a tricky question. Some people think an advisor is an administrative cost and some other people think it's not. Some people think it's just the vice presidents and the deans, and other people think it's not. Just a few short years ago, we embarked, when President Kaler first came, to get on the business of trying to do our own definition of administrative costs. And we ended up taking the budget of the university, the actual spend, and putting it into how much we spend on mission activities, how much we spend on facilities and mission support, and how much is in the executive management leadership of the institutions. And we did that in order to establish a benchmark. And now we're measuring against that. And, you know, the tricky thing about the University of Minnesota is when, you know, we're multi-fund sources and we have a huge research portfolio. So when a faculty member gets a $20 million research grant, that grant may well have features in it that add administrative costs. And we don't want to not take that research activity and have someone to manage it programmatically. And sometimes that person ends up being called a coordinator. And some people would then put that in the admin bucket. So our attempt was to benchmark those into those three buckets and monitor whether we were at least not increasing the percent of the overall university's budget going to administrative leadership, so that we could say, are we putting more money into mission, spending more of the budget in mission, and less in the other two buckets? And we would be happy to come and see and walk you through that. But that was our benchmarking, because we needed a benchmark to make sure that we were accomplishing what the president wanted to accomplish.
So just in summary, again, I think your answer indicates why we have questions about that area, because it sounds like you're using some off-budget type analysis to determine how you're performing. You know, this financial statement doesn't necessarily say that.
Mr. Chairman, members, remember, financial statements are, as I testified before, and I don't think we've still connected on a meeting yet, but financial statements are pretty misleading for purposes of trying to answer a lot of the questions that this committee has. But the analysis we're doing, the numbers we're creating, emanate right out of the financial ledger of the institution. But the way all the accountants sum things up in the financial statement, to me, don't answer the kind of questions that we try to manage to.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you. Just one quick thought. And you know, I didn't get into the details, although it may seem as though I have. I haven't. But it goes back to my question the other day of institutional support, which seems like an overhead type area that went up $59 million from 13 to 14. You look into the detail of that, and it does say that compensation related increases are primarily due to the university's salary increase of 2.5%. And some merger of the University of Minnesota Foundation with the Minnesota Medical Foundation. That's $24 million right there. You know, so I mean, the question is that overhead or not? If it is overhead, then I would say, and you're adding it to your bottom line, I would say you didn't achieve your goal of decreasing system-wide admin costs by $18 million. And that's in the weeds. I didn't want to do that right now, but that's one example of some things I see that seem to want us to ask questions about whether the $18 million actually was achieved or whether it was just achieved here but not achieved and that added $18 million over here.
I think, you know, we're getting into the weeds. And as I said to the committee before, institutional support would not be my measure of whether or not administrative costs went down. But we need to have a conversation because there's just so many things, as I said, loaded into that particular category. But again, just as an example, the bringing in, changing the accounting practice of the MMF was simply moving it from an agency fund that isn't in our financials to being reflected in our financials. So it isn't an increase, it's just an accounting change. So that's why I don't really like having that stuff. But it's all that you've had a chance to look at. We haven't had a chance to dive into the weeds on it. And rather than take committee time here, I'm still hoping we can get a meeting to chat.
Members, in fairness to also Minsky, I'd like to probably move into that report as soon as we can. We could probably talk for the rest of the period, rest of the committee time, about the university. So we'll continue that at another time if that's okay with members. Unless Representative Pawlowski, could you make it real short?
It's going to be short, Mr. Fitzenreiter. When we meet, and now I'm looking at, you know, what exactly you cut and some of the sizes of these administrative numbers. I would like to know, in the areas, if we just took the medical school or whatever it was, what was the percent of administration that was actually cut if we're looking at, you know, $554,000 for the elimination of these positions? What's the percent inside that area of administration that's actually being cut? And I use the word cut now because I think truth in advertising is this is reallocation. There really aren't cuts. You're moving. So when you did your slide earlier in session, it was $90 million in administrative cuts. Well, it's reallocation. So can you, when we meet, tell me the percent of what we're actually eliminating in these areas of administration? Because if it's 1% or 2% or 10% or more, it would be most helpful.
Okay, that's to be...
That's continued meeting.
Be continued. Okay.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen has, he said a real short question.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. Just, excuse me. I just want to follow up on Representative Barrett's comment. You know, when I was on the school board, I didn't know if you knew I was on now, but the, yeah, 16 years. But we had an auditor come through, and he had a little booklet for us. It wasn't much thicker than this right here, but it had comparative and historical data in it. In other words, it compared us to other districts our size, along with the state, in terms of administration, you know, mission, facilities, transportation, those types of things. They had little graphs. And for a layperson like me, it just laid it out. And you saw it showed special ed and those types of things. So you saw how you compared to other districts of similar size, and you saw how you compared statewide, and you were also able to see, based on the graphs and the numbers, how much you increased in a particular area. And for a layperson, that was so easily to digest. And if you had, you know, if something went up dramatically, like Representative Barrett was, you'd know the area that it did go up, and you could dig down as a school board member to see why we were out of balance, or why we went down, or why we went up so much. So historical and comparative. And when I talk about comparative, other universities similar to your size, in our region, you know, that are spending, you know, similar amounts that have the same type of overall budget, and how are they doing it? And it helps lay people interpret, and I think it would answer a lot of the questions.
Representative Grunhagen?
Yep.
Brief,
that was it.
Okay.
But I'll talk to him outside.
Mr. Chairman, members, we have an enormous amount of comparative data on both the Budget Office website and the
Institute of Research. I think that's what he's requesting.
Well,
yes. Very good. I didn't mean to cut you off, but we do have to move on.
I completely understand.
Yeah. Save questions now for Minsky. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
You know, I'm really frustrated. I just have to say that. Because like some
Norton.
Of the people who spent a long time asking questions, I too had a couple things to say, some questions, and now we've been cut off. So I'm going to, if we're having a door-to-door, which sounds like a number of people have asked, of the university, I too have questions I would like to ask the U about, including the UMD coach and some other issues that we haven't even been able to touch on, as well as their performance schedule. So... I think they've run, but I guess if we're not going to bring these folks back, I would ask that whomever is still left from the U that they would make an appointment and come to my office as well.
I think that's a very good request, and I'm hoping that somebody will make sure they get the message. And I apologize for having to move on, but again, Minsky has a presentation they'd like to present to us, and... I'm sure they're looking forward to this. We are. So
we'd like to thank the university for warming the committee up.
Laura King, you're going to be first off.
Mr. Chair, Craig Schoenecker here, Senior Director for Research, will start us out.
Okay. Please identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Chair Nornes and representatives, committee staff. For the record, my name is Craig Schoenecker, Senior Assistant Director for Research with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. We thank you for the opportunity to come before you today to talk about the achievement of our colleges and universities on the performance measures that were enacted in the 2013 Appropriations Act. I'll just reference a couple of documents. We provided you a printout of the PowerPoint presentation and also the two most recent memos that were submitted to the chairs of this committee documenting our achievement of the goals that had been put in place in the statute. First off, I'd like to touch a little bit on the history of performance funding. Going back to your question, Chair Nornes, there actually have been three cycles of performance measures and performance funding withheld during the last 8 years or so. The first one was in the 2007 session, where we had five performance goals specified, had 1% of our appropriation withheld. And the system, the colleges and universities, achieved all five of those goals. Then again in 2011, we had another cycle with 1% withheld, five goals. We achieved four of those goals. And then in 2013, the amount that was withheld was 5% of our appropriation for the second year of the biennium. And there again, we achieved four of the five goals that were specified. The five measures that were spelled out for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities in the 2013 Appropriations Act included increasing the number of graduates or the number of degrees, diplomas, and certificates conferred, an increase in our second fall persistence and completion rate, an increase in our related employment rate of graduates, some work in the area of making more open educational resources available to our students, and then finally, a goal to reallocate a specified amount of funds. And as I indicated, we achieved four of those five measures during the last year and a half. The goal on increasing graduates or degrees, diplomas, and certificates was for the colleges and universities to achieve a 4% increase between fiscal 2010 and fiscal 2013. And indeed, the increase that occurred during that time frame was 12% in terms of graduates and 10.5% in terms of the number of degrees, diplomas, and certificates that were awarded. The second goal, an increase in the second fall persistence and completion rate. Here, the goal was a 1-point increase on the rate. And although the colleges and universities did not achieve that 1-point increase, there was a modest tenth of a point increase. I'd like to make a few remarks about this goal and our achievement on it. As you know, the economy has been expanding significantly during the last year, and we believe that many of our students are leaving before completing a credential to take employment. We're hearing that anecdotally from across our system, students finding employment opportunities and leaving before completing a credential. That's good news for Minnesota in terms of employment, but it does have an impact on our ability to increase both second fall and subsequent completion rates of our students. We do believe that we will see improvements going forward. We know that our students' college readiness and their financial resources have a big impact on second fall persistence rates as well as completion rates. And we've seen some efforts like the legislative move to provide us resources to freeze tuition, the work that our colleges and universities have been doing to raise funds for scholarships. Those efforts are addressing the affordability of education in our system. And another major effort is the work that the legislature has done and that the State Department of Education is doing to improve the readiness of high school graduates as they come to us. And we believe that those efforts also will result in improved persistence and ultimately improved completion rates. I guess the last comment I'd make about persistence rates are they're challenging to move. An increase of a full point on that rate is a very substantial increase, but I want you to know that we are fully engaged in the work of implementing strategies to improve our persistence rates, and we do believe that that's one of our highest priorities, and we do believe that we will see fruits from those efforts in the next couple of years. Just a comment about the persistence and completion rate. Give you a bit of context on what that measure is. We identify our fall entering students. In this case, the rate that we were looking at is for full-time degree-seeking students at the undergraduate level. And then second fall persistence rate would be we look at where those students are at a year after entry. Are they either retained at the same college or university, or have they already graduated? Some of the students coming in with credits can earn a credential by the second fall. The third category would be, have they transferred to some other U.S. college or university? And so what we call the persistence and completion rate is the composite of students in each of those three statuses. Our third goal was an increase in the related employment rate of graduates. The goal was a four-point increase, and indeed what the colleges and universities were able to achieve was a 5.9% increase in the related employment of graduates. And that measure is based on a survey of our graduates, and it is the graduates reporting employment in a job that is related to the major or program that they had completed. And we're looking at employment in the full fiscal year after the year in which the graduates completed their credentials. The fourth measure was work in the area of understanding the extent of use of open educational resources by our campuses, but also putting in place a plan to expand that use, with an ultimate goal being to reduce students' expenses for books and other educational resources. We've already implemented that plan. We've had a task force that's been looking at the full range of open resources, how we can expand that use. We've got efforts underway to work with faculty to promote the use of those open resources, to identify resources that are available. And we believe that that will lead to significantly expanded use of those resources to the ultimate benefit of our students. Now I'm going to turn it over to Laura King to talk about the reallocation measure.
Thank you, Greg. Okay. The last of our five goals concerned reallocation of resources. The target here was reallocation of $22 million. Through expense realignment in fiscal year 14, and our performance, in fact, was a reallocation of $29 million in fiscal 14. And you heard a little bit about that from us yesterday, and we can talk more about it if you'd like today. But the target was $22 million. Our actual achievement was $29 million. We have a long history, annual history of reallocations. As a normal part of our budget process, we expect the reallocations in our fiscal 15 budget to exceed $30 million, and we have a planning estimate in 16 and 17 of $22 million each per year. Mr. Chair, with that, we had five goals in the language of the most recent higher education bill. We provided a letter to you that's in your materials today that went to the Commissioner of Finance in the spring of 2014, indicating that we had performed above the target for four of the five goals, and requesting the release of the 5% appropriation that was withheld as part of that session law. And the appropriation was subsequently released.
All right.
We'll pause there, Mr. Chair, and entertain any questions.
Okay. Just a quick question. You'd mentioned this has been, 8 years? Is that what you said earlier, that this has been a requirement?
Chair Nordness, it's actually been three of the biennial budget processes within the last four, we have had a set of performance goals and appropriations withheld.
Can you share, were the goals similar to what you have just been achieving? Do you recall?
Some of the goals have been consistent throughout that time frame, but some of them have changed. I think 4 years ago, we had...
One that comes to mind, Mr. Chair, that was different two cycles ago was a target for energy reduction in our colleges and universities, and we met that target. That pops to mind for me. We've had the persistence and completion goal before.
Graduates or degrees also were consistent, but that previous cycle we had the number of students of color was one of our goals, and then offering of online courses. Those were the two that are not part of the current process.
Okay. Members got questions? We have Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I knew your name. I was going to call you Josh. I thought that's not right.
It would be okay, Mr. Chair. No, I'm not sure who direct this question at to specifically, but how was or will the $29 million be allocated?
Certainly, okay. Mr. Chair and Representative. Let me say a bit more specifically about that $29 million. We have, for over 10 years, asked the campuses, as part of their annual budget process, to log their decisions so that they can tell us what programs, how many programs, at what dollar amount are they closing, how are they changing their equipment budgets, how are they changing their facilities programs, what kind of position impacts do they have, what's happening with changes in student services, et cetera. So they have a pretty well-developed management process to keep track of their decisions. In fiscal 14, in this $29 million we're talking about, out of a total $29 million in reallocations, $18 million of it was used to balance the budget at the campuses, and $11 million was used to invest in new campus initiatives, all under the direction of the campus leadership. Reallocations were greater than projected, and the largest area of reallocations is in personnel. In fiscal 14, we had 245 positions that were held vacant or eliminated or in some cases laid off. And then on the other side, campuses created 111 new positions for a net position reduction of 134 staff and faculty. And those distribute themselves across a variety of things. They had new programs designed. They changed faculty assignments from one program to another. They reassigned administrative staff. They added staff to student services. It's across the whole spectrum of campus management. And, of course, these are the numbers that roll up from 31 campuses. So these are pretty big numbers in terms of totals. On the other hand, we had 21 programs closed. We had 100 faculty positions held vacant, 112 administrative positions eliminated, and 10 student service positions eliminated. So there were decisions to stop doing something on one side and start doing something on the other side, and all of those decisions added up to $29 million and a net of about 134 positions eliminated.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd follow up with, is there a way to see, as there's been a change in the need in terms of programs, is there a way to see what programs were expanded in response to this or in response to a need in the state of Minnesota? And I'm thinking specifically in my own district of a expanded program on the technical side to help with some of the needs in the machining industry.
Ms. King?
Mr. Chair, Representative, certainly we can provide you with our program inventory, which can tell us programs opened and programs closed. It'll be a little harder for us to tell you whether there were sections of existing programs added to respond to demand
or sections. I'm not sure our data set does that.
Chair Donis.
John Ucker.
Representative Heitman. One of the things we can do is provide a little bit more detail on that number of degrees, diplomas, and certificates. And what we see there is there are a number of the kind of important program areas for Minnesota's economy where we've had substantial growth over that three-year period in the number of degrees, diplomas, and certificates conferred. So that will give you some sense of how the colleges and universities are responding to employer needs.
All right. Other questions? We're going once. I guess I think you've covered it pretty well, it appears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So,
thank you, members.
Thank you for being here and for the presentation.
Thank you.
At this time, Susan Hegard is on my agenda to share with some information. She has a long history with higher education and the state grant program and more. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, members.
Before you start, this sign language is not helping. Do you like her?
Mr. Chair, thank you. No, I was wondering, since we have time, if we can bring the U back for some of our questions.
No, they left.
Oh. That's sorry. Fine. How do you do?
Sorry. Sorry for the disruption.
Drew Hagen chased him out.
Ms. Hegard, welcome to the committee.
Chair Nornes and members, my name is Susan Hegard, and I am currently with a group called HTM Strategists out of Washington, D.C., and I'm a state advisor for the Lumina Foundation in Minnesota and Wisconsin. And so what I wanted to spend a little bit of time with you today talking about is performance metrics and a report that we put into your file earlier. For those of you in the audience who don't have this report, you can easily access it if you Google HCM Strategists. So I would encourage you to take a look at this, and I'll be referencing this as well. And I certainly don't want to take your time, and so if you'd like to follow up with questions for Minsky or the U, please let me know. So outcomes-based funding, I think, is talked about. There's been a history here in Minnesota going back to about 2007. And nationally, a number of states have tried some measure of performance or outcomes-based funding over the years. Early on, it was called performance funding. That tends to be focused more on institutions or groups of institutions. And it was always sort of thought of as a bonus as opposed to base funding. Outcomes-based funding is the terminology that's used more nowadays, and it refers more to a statewide approach and hopefully rolls up to some goals at the state level. So first of all, I wanted to applaud you and the institutions that you're working with on doing this, because while a number of states have tried it, I think Minnesota has done it the right way, which is by looking carefully at the workforce needs of the state, looking at the demographics of the state, engaging the institutions, taking it slowly, and being very mindful of the needs of the state in general. One of the things that you'll note in this report are some maps and things, so you'll see sort of where Minnesota is in the context of the rest of the country. We right now allocate 5% of our funding to outcomes measures. Some states like Tennessee go all the way up to 80%, so it really depends upon a particular situation of the state and what those needs are. Why on earth would a state do something like outcomes-based funding? Well, there are a number of reasons. Hopefully, there will be greater awareness of state priorities and institutional performance. You'll be able to better use data for informed decision-making. I think as Representative Pawlowski has expressed, interest in understanding more about administrative costs. And once there are savings that occur with administrative costs, can those costs be reallocated in other ways? And different professional support for faculty, for example. The objective overall of outcomes-based funding is to align your funding, your higher education funding appropriations that you're all responsible for, with the state's higher education attainment goals and student success priorities. That's the most important thing. And then are the institutions lining up their priorities with those of the state and scaling and focusing on student success? And then finally, making sure that they're being held accountable for their role in reaching state attainment goals. So one of the things that we're missing, as you'll see in this report, is an attainment goal for the state overall. So a number of states have focused on an attainment goal. That's a very, very high priority for the Lumina Foundation and for a number of other kind of national organizations across the country. And what does attainment mean? So you'll hear the terminology attainment and completion. They're related but different. Completion really is more institution specific, so you might ask MNCU or the U, what are the completion rates for your graduates right now? And that really focuses more on an institution specific level. An attainment goal really is looking overall at your state at the number of degrees that you have. And so when I talk about degree, it doesn't just mean a 4-year degree. We're talking certificates, 2-year degrees, and 4-year degrees, something or more, something beyond just a certificate. Because we all know that across the spectrum, those degrees are really important, and it's very hard to be successful in the current environment without something beyond a high school diploma. So our current attainment rate in Minnesota is 47.7%. The national average is below that, so that's good that we're above the national average. The Lumina Foundation's goal is that by 2025, 60% on average across the country of people have some kind of a degree or certificate beyond high school. And, of course, the performance metrics then can kind of roll up to a state level and then create better focus for the state. So I just wanted to provide you with an opportunity to see this report, let you know that as a state advisor, I can't lobby. I need to be asked for advice and counsel. If you'd like to have a meeting, please let us know. In Wisconsin, I'm working with the UW system there as they're facing a very significant budget challenge, a $300 million reduction on top of a reduction that happened 2 years ago. One of the conversations is, can there be some metrics for the UW system in exchange for granting them some additional autonomy? So I've been working with Ray Cross, the president there, and then also with their tech college system. They've developed a performance metrics approach for the tech colleges, and they have 30% of their funding set aside for performance. We've also taken a look over the years at the MNCU and U of M metrics and provided some advice and counsel. And, of course, we need to be asked to do that, but we're happy to do so. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions or just step aside.
Thank you very much. Very, very timely presentation for us. Members, any questions of Ms. Hegart? Well, I guess not. Thank you very much for
Thank
this
you.
Information. Very quiet now. Members, we have come to the end of our agenda. And there's nothing more to do but gavel the meeting over. Okay.